Welcome to the Bill Cartwright Show with our co-host Steve Cohen, with our special guest, family affairs star, author, voiceover star, and public speaker, Kathy Garber. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Steve. Very happy to be here.
Obviously, I watched you so much growing up, and I talked to my wife, Sherry, and just having you on the show, everybody loves you. It's really incredible.
Well, sometimes you can talk to my husband of 43 years, and you know there may be some down points. It's, I don't like this. Don't you have anything else for dinner we can have? But besides that, it's most people have been very kind throughout the years.
Well, I feel like we know you, but let's start with this. Let's talk about where you grew up. And let's talk about your parents a little bit.
I was born in Long Beach, California. And then we moved to Baldwin Hills when I was 10 months old. My dad was an architect contractor. And so from Baldwin Hills, we went to Beverly Hills. And I went to Beverly Hills Catholic School. And I started working actually professionally when I was 7. I started out with a movie called Night of the Hunter, which was this really kind of scary movie with Robert Mitchum and Shelley Winters and Lillian Gish, Peter Graves. Billy Chapin was Lauren Chapin's brother from The Father Knows Best. It was an incredible cast. And it was directed by Charles Laughton. And this was the first movie he had ever directed. He was known as a wonderful actor. And so he directed it and it got awful reviews. And he was so discouraged that he never made another movie. It turns out that this movie, which was really ahead of its time, has now become and recognized as one of the top 100 movies, horror movies, that have ever been made. It was a psychological horror movie. So that's how I got, that was my first professional job. And then I went from horror to wonderfulness doing the Ten Commandments when I was a child. And it had a wonderful director who had done many epics, including, you know, all the, but the Ten Commandments, this was not the silent version. I'm not that old. But it was that. So that's, and I started when I was 3 dancing and singing at the Meglin Studios. And that was a studio in Hollywood where they discovered Shirley Temple. So those are my kind of claims to fame.
Now, did you get started? Now, did your mom get you started? Or did you have a family member or somebody who was already in the business that got you started? Because that's very early.
Yes, it is. I happen to be the youngest of 4 children. And my sister was this prodigy. Although she was reading at 3 when that was many years ago, not something that little kids do these days. And she graduated UCLA at 19. She entered 15. She skipped the first 3 years of school because she was really smart. She was the oldest one. And then I had 2 brothers. And then I came along. I was kind of at a little mistake. They weren't planning on this 4th child, but my mother had more time to spend with me. And at that, all those kids were from Oklahoma and they moved from the Dust Bowl times to California, where I was born. So she had more time. And I had the influence of my older siblings. So that helps, I think, you on the road. And I was very athletic when I was young. And at 3 years old, I was doing the splits. I was doing cartwheels. I was doing all these things. At that time, again, my sister, oh, she can't go into this cartwheel stuff and acrobatics. She's not going to be in the circus. She was very adamant about that. But I was very athletic. And so I started dancing. And they said, oh, we'd have to put her in dance class. So that's when I started with 3, because I was already very active in doing all those things.
So talk about what kind of kid were you in high school? And talk about your time at UCLA, which I'm very intrigued about.
I started out at Emerson Junior High School in Westwood. And then we moved to San Bernardino. And I was grateful for that because I went to Pacific High School in San Bernardino, and I am still like best friends with about 20 of my high school friends. But I was very smart. And again, I got this influence from my sister. And I was in all the clubs, and I was a cheerleader in high school. So of course, then when I went to UCLA, I had to try out to be a cheerleader. And I was there during the era of Lou Alcindor and Kareem Abdul Jabbar.
Yes.
We always called him Lou, and I was up to like his belt. I am 5 foot 1, and Lou, as you know, is like 7 foot 2. You're what, 7 foot 1? You know, so
Yeah.
like, hi there, Bill. How you doing? Hi, Lou. But that was John, John Wooden was a fabulous coach. And so I had some wonderful times, and at UCLA was known so much for their great basketball team. Their football, we always had the big rivalry with SC. SC would win football, and we'd always win the basketball.
Wow, talk about that atmosphere, because that was really at the peak of the championship years, and John Wooden obviously one of the greatest coaches of all time. So you've really seen some really special people.
Absolutely. And we had wonderful classes and great classmates. Unfortunately, there was a lot of turmoil at the time I was at UCLA, and I will remember the assassination, and I was hurrying to class as usual, usually late. And then there was this fellow on the radio, and he had it glued to his ear, and it was just such a tragedy. So we were, all concerned about what was going on in the world. And to have the sports and to have that something else to see and to be involved in, and to something to win and to something to be brave for and persevere, it was very exciting. And I was in theater at UCLA, but I actually majored in speech. That's why I talk so much. I'm smart, but I majored in speech at UCLA and minored in psychology. So my psychology, is like, well, Kathy, you're really chatty. I said, I know, but I had a cup of tea this morning, a little caffeine. But it was an exciting time to grow up and be in the 60s and at UCLA and with all the energy that was going on then.
So I believe when you're at UCLA, that's when Family Affair jumped in, something that we watched growing up that we're really thrilled. So talk about that, and how did that happen?
Well, I was a Pi Phi, Pi Beta Phi at the sorority. And by that time, my family had moved back to Los Angeles, and I was in my third year of college, and I still had my childhood agent, Hazel McMillan, who was a wonderful child agent. She was the mother of Gloria McMillan, who was on Armis Brooks, the radio show and the television show, like back in the 50s. And she was really a wonderful agent, I must say. So here I am at the sorority. My mom calls and says, well, you have an interview this afternoon for a series that's already been sold. He says, and they have the cast. Brian Keith is starring in it, and they've got Sebastian Cabot and two little kids, but they need a teenage sister. And I says, oh, okay. And but she said, they want somebody with blonde hair. At that time, I did not have blonde hair. I had dark hair. And blue eyes. I had brown eyes, but I couldn't fix that. So, and they want to see you this afternoon. So I'm in the sorority, and my mom goes, Mom, I have to be over in Westwood, and I know you're from Northern California, but Steve, I don't know where you're based, in LA or Northern California.
Oh, no, actually in New York,
Oh,
but yeah.
you know traffic. Then what I was going to say is trying to get across town from Westwood to Hollywood. So I says, Mom, come and pick me up. And they want someone with blonde hair. So my mom had this brilliant idea. I love my mom. I love my family. So she went to the drugstore and got me this stuff called Streaks and Tips. Now, you guys probably don't know about the Streaks and Tips, and you don't know about hairspray, Steve. But
Very
we
true. Rub it in.
just a little ribbing. So she brought this stuff that you spray on your hair, and it's supposed to change the color from like dark brown to blonde or whatever. So she sprayed my hair. I look like something out of Goldfinger. I mean, this brassy gold hair, and you would knock on it was like a helmet I was wearing. But we had to go. I dressed. They wanted a 15-year-old, but as you know, in pictures and film, they like to have an older, like an 18-year-old playing any of the teenagers because they can work longer. The younger kids have to go to school for 3 hours, and then they can only work for 8 hours, and they have to. So they prefer having someone that was 18. Well, I was actually a couple years older than 18. I told them I was 18, however, I was 18. So I dressed up in looking like a 15-year-old. I start to talk with the producer, creator, director at Hartman. And I thought we were getting along just fine. Then he looked at my hair and he says, "What's the matter with your hair?" I said, "My hair? See, we started this whole thing out about hair." He said, "Well, it's turning green." I said, "Oh, is that funny? It must be the light or something." Ha ha ha. Well, anyway, it raised the temper of the room, and I did then a I appeared in front of the camera for a test, and they said, "Okay, here's one more hair thing." They sent me to Max Factor in Hollywood, and they put on this long blonde wig, and then they outfitted me in this little blue and white checked pinafore. And that's when I did the test in. So go back to the sorority house. 3 days later, my agent calls up and says, "You have the job." She says, "There's just one caveat, two caveats." I says, "What's that?" She said, "Never wear that dress again and never wear that wig again." I said, "You got it." And that's how I got Family Affair.
Can you talk just briefly, because I'm sure you can talk a lot about your co-stars that we watched so many years?
Well, Brian Keith, of course, was absolutely fabulous. He was known as a macho man, and he had done some stuff with Charlton Heston. And but when he did The Parent Trap, they saw that he had this wonderful comedic kind of side to him. So he became the uncle. Sebastian Cabot was a very formal kind of actor. It was interesting because they had two different styles. Brian was, "Okay, yeah, what do we have today? All right, yeah." He'd read the script once, and then they'd just do it. Sebastian memorized every single word exactly as it was said, and on over the weekend, and so he got them all down. So it was a nice dynamic. And kids are kids. They have to, hit their lines and say and be as natural as they can. And both Jody and Buffy were very talented, sweet little kids. So that was fun. It was a very good cast.
Now, did you have any special guest stars on, somebody that came on the show that you really admired or liked?
Oh yeah. As a matter of fact, I know we'll probably get into this, but since you brought it up, this is my newest book, which is The Family Affair Scrapbook. And in the book, I turned exactly to it. Notable guests. So you got. So we had a lot of notable guests. Robert Reed was on it. Ida Lupino, who was absolutely fabulous, and she came back for two more episodes. We were so enthralled with her. We had all kinds of Vic Tayback. Heather Angel was one of Sebastian's friends. She was a wonderful movie actress. So yeah, Lee Merriweather, who then became, I mean, there's all kinds of wonderful guest stars that we had. And they were always fun.
So now your show's about to end. Talk about what did you feel like? Did you feel like you knew what was next, or did you feel like I've got to do something?
Yes, I had no idea what to do. So I decided, oh, it was at that time that I was invited to go to Israel to do a Hebrew-Israeli version of Family Affair, a musical. So they adapted some the characters and some scenes from Family Affair. And so I went on stage and I played myself. And then we had a faux Mr. French and Uncle Bill. And so here was this nice Catholic girl, and I learned Hebrew for the whole thing. Ani habatarishona. I can still remember these songs. So when I was in Israel, I decided, well, here I am all the way across the pond. I think I'll go to London. So here I was just in my 20s, but you're a little more adventurous, I think, in your 20s than you are when you get a little older. Would rather just sit inside and be, talk to nice gentlemen and a podcast in your own house. So I went to London, went to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, and then I went back to California, got my master's degree in theater arts, and then I started doing, this was at the time where they had dinner theaters. Oh, this is so weird. Okay, so I have a 32-year-old son that's going to be 33 tomorrow, and he has never left home. He invited his girlfriend of now 11 years to live with us. But that's an aside. He took over like a portion of the garage, then another portion of the garage, and my boxes were in there. And he says, "You have to get rid of all these boxes, Mom. They don't understand that this is our memorabilia." So anyway, 3 days ago, I was going through the boxes. I came across these. Oh, here was a thing about plays. So those dinner theater plays that I was doing after I came back. I says, "Oh, here is the Robinson Summerstock Theater," and I was going there. There I am. No, on the other side. This is a mirror, doing Star Spangled Girl, and then I think Ed Burns is next from another one, and then Carl Betz, and then I forget who's at the end. Dwayne, yeah, Dwayne Hickman. So I don't want to throw these things away. So, but I have like more than one of them. So I got rid of them. And I get this email about 2 hours later from this fellow that says, "Oh, hello. I'm from Illinois, and I'm it's the 50th anniversary of this theater. And I was just wondering, do you recall anything about doing this play? You did a play there." And Star Spangled Girl, I said, "You have got to be kidding me." I said, "Just 2 hours ago, I'm getting all this stuff away to throw away." And I had an article about it. I have the thing. So the moral to this story is don't make your parents throw away their stuff until they're gone. So that's the moral.
Steve, I'm going to give you a chance.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's a lot here, Kathy. I think one thing that you said that I found very interesting, and I know you've written books about child stars, but you're in a sorority, you get on this show, and yet you become very famous and have this great career, and yet why do you think you've been able to maintain all those friendships? You know, a lot of times people have jealousy or envy about people. So, what is it about you that makes all these people stay in your life and feel supportive of you?
I think that comes from my parents, and also I separated my life a lot from the people that were in Hollywood and from my friends that I knew so well. And they were always very supportive. And a lot of times the friendships of like women you might make in the business are much more jealous and competitive than friends that one became a lawyer and one became a pharmacist, and they pursued different careers. So I wasn't, and they were all very important to me because I really, I think just my persona, I am attracted to people just by their insides, who they are, and the way that they treat other people, and their kindness. And if I feel, I know we all have that inner sense, and if you like somebody like right away, or if you say, "Oh my God, this person may not be the best person for me to stay with." But I mean, I have friends since the first grade, Jeannie Gifford, who became a dental hygienist, and we were in the same sorority. And as I say, I had this coterie of friends, this 20 of our high school friends, and we just keep texting, and we're trying to keep up with all the technology and reunions that we had. And he says, "Well, we have to do mini reunions. They're still my best friends." And for ex-child stars, yes, you mentioned my book. So this was my book, Ex-Child Stars. And where are they now? I was very, very, very lucky because, again, of my parents that put down a nice foundation. They did not take all my money, as so many of the parents of child stars will do. They, I was going to say some people that I know, but anyway, a lot of the parents would use the money to pay for the other kids in the family, or to help pay a mortgage, or do something like this. Then the child gets to be 18, and, well, excuse me, what happened to all my money? And that's only one part of it. The other part is being on drugs. So kids are usually in a child star is just, oh, let me fix your hair. Oh, you need some makeup. I'll be your PR person. I'll take care of your legal things. I'll do it. They never develop the skills when they get older to know how to pursue their career. And I imagine, and that's in sports too, I would think, Bill, because you're so, wow, look at how athletic he is. And in high school, he can do all this stuff. And you're put in a position where you don't have, maybe you haven't developed yet how to handle all those accolades and to handle all of that pressure. And you have to do well in this game, or you have to do well on the set. I mean, there are a lot of similarities, I think, between the kids and gentlemen that grow up and be stars and are able to make the transition nicely, and be grateful and handle it, because so many people just can't. So, and a lot of the kids that I think that are in showbiz, they get on drugs, and the people around them are on drugs, and they are depressed, and they didn't get a job. Because it's one thing to be a cute little kid and be natural and say your lines. It's different than when you're a teenager, you're awkward, you're trying to find your identity, you're not getting all the jobs, you lost your series, what do you do now? And so they join up with people that happened to the little girl on the show and the little boy. They both got into drugs, and that's sad. And I was very lucky that I never have, just because I'm crazy enough, and I don't want anything to make me feel anything more or sense anything more. I drink. I like Chardonnay a lot, but like drugs, so I've been fortunate that way. I've been fortunate that my parents saved every single penny I ever made, and I had it all when I turned 18. So they're cautionary tales. And again, with the sports, a young fellow or woman is given all this money all the time. He says, "Wow, this is great. Let's spend it here. Let's spend it here." And they have not been taught like the business of sports or the business of acting. They haven't taught show biz, and they're good actors, they're good athletes, but all those particular things, you have to have that other sense. And I think I was reading something about you, Bill, where you went into the business world, and you find that that's different, but it's also challenging and rewarding.
Yeah, it is a good challenge, which is why I think a lot of athletes could do that because they can compete. I just want to ask you two questions. You do voiceovers, which I probably can't do. How did you get into that? And also, you do public speaking as well. What is your message?
Well, my message in public speaking is the power of perseverance, and that we all have pitfalls and we all have obstacles, but you just keep on going. You go around it, you go over it, you go through it, but you get there. And it's don't give up. And that's like Winston, Churchill, never, 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 never. There's nine of them. Give up. And it's true, because sometimes people are just, oh, I failed it, or nobody liked this. Yeah, that's okay. Pick yourself. This is President's Day. You know, and you see how many times did Lincoln fail? You know, he kept going. He kept going and going. And so those are, I think, good things and reminders that even though you don't do it the first time, you just try, try again. And for voiceovers, I got into voiceovers from my commercial agents. And I said, voiceover, I never heard of what that is. What does that even mean? They wanted this voice for a tuna fish commercial. So my agent sends me out for this thing. I have no idea what I'm supposed to be doing. So I go to Century City and I see the advertising agent. The fellow gives me the script. I know about scripts. And he says, just read this. I said, just read it. I said, oh, okay. I like tuna fish. It was like Starkist. So I like Starkist tuna fish. He says, oh, okay, now read it a different way. What do you mean read it a different way? In a different voice, read it in a different voice. What different voice than my voice? No, okay. I like tuna fish. I like Starkist. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so I didn't know how to do voiceover, so I immediately went out to find out how to do it. And I took some classes. Mel Wells, I took classes from, and I had majored in speech. So I knew all about nice speaking and then Shakespeare, but that is not necessarily what you need for voiceover. So I actually became very confident in voiceover. I've recorded 80 audiobooks, and I have, oh, and I swear to God, I did not get these out on purpose to show you, but I'm trying to clean out my boxes for my son, but I came up with these are audio awards that I won for doing audiobooks. And I'm the voice of Firestar. Oh, here she is. I keep myself surrounded by myself. This is my character, Firestar. My son ran over her. Unfortunately, she was in a box, but in the garage. That's where he wants me to get everything out. So this is Spider-Man and his amazing friend. So I'm the voice of Firestar and her alter ego, Angelica Jones. And I've done like five animated series, and I do a lot of commercials with voiceover. I also just still do regular commercials. It's my philosophy, and especially, as you get older, just to keep yourself busy. But also, and I taught, excuse me, I taught for about 20 years for voiceover, how to do animated characters, how to do audio narration, how to do real people commercials, because the more skills you have, the more things you're able to do. So, and as you're going to practice a different movement to make a basket. You're going to practice a different thing. I mean, when I was in San Francisco, and of course we'd always watch the Warriors, and they were so cool because they faked all the, I've never seen a team fake so much in my estimation as the Warriors, because they would go like this, and then they'd make the pass to somebody else. And also, I think I was reading something about you, Bill, and oh, what was his name? I was going to say, the real tall one. He actually lived around the corner from me on Mulholland. But that you guys didn't go to intimidate. You went there to play the game. You went there with your skill sets and your abilities to play the game. That's my sports thing.
Yeah, that's actually a very good scouting report. We're gonna have to, that's gonna be your next job.
Okay.
I was trying to think which basketball player did live around the corner from you. Was it a teammate of Bill's? Was it Kareem in LA? Or
It wasn't Kareem, but
right.
he lived right off of Mulholland as you're going down Benedict Canyon, which is now closed
Okay.
because of the floods. Oh, I'll think of it like at 3 a.m. this
Yeah.
morning, or after we're done. I
Yeah, we're
remember because he had his whole house refitted to make things taller, like ceilings and everything.
not Wilt Chamberlain,
Yes.
right?
Oh, no. In between Wilt, it wasn't Wilt. It was after Wilt. But I
Yeah.
yeah.
And have you run into Kareem over the years, or Bill Walton, and at UCLA events, or any of that stuff?
I've run into Kareem a couple times. Yeah. And said hi. And they're very nice, very, very giving people, I think.
You know, Kathy, you said you've been married for 43 years. I happen to be married for 44.
Oh, you beat me.
Yeah, I understand. Sometimes it's so.
So what do you attribute your longevity in marriage?
Well, we're pretty balanced. It is, you know, it's interesting. It is a little bit like sports because we don't try to get too high and too low. We're all on the same team. And we just want to be happy. And I'm probably similar to you that there's no retirement in me. I want to keep going, keep moving, keep creating. If I can help somebody else along with their journey, that would give me a lot of pleasure. So just use that experience. And your experience is just really amazing. It's really inspiring. It's got to be to a lot of young ladies who have a dream and to be able to pursue that dream. So interesting that I feel like we're very similar in what we're trying to accomplish. But to go back to that, let's talk about your husband a little bit. You can't leave him out.
Yeah, he's a nice, I was thinking, I wonder why we've been married so long. I said, because I like him. You know, I do. He is a very kind person, and he's pretty laid back, and he's much kinder than I am, because I can get angry, you know, and I'm impatient with people. It's all right. They'll come around. It's okay. So he's kind of like a nice influence on me, and he's supportive, and I'm sure your wife is. I mean, they have to like you for it to go on for a long time. But yeah, I've been doing affirmations. My son with it, because I have this influence of these 33-year-olds. Well, she'll be 33 next month. And it's nice to see what they are involved with. And she turned me on to affirmations. So she has a little bit of American Indian in her. And so she's this spiritual kind of, she sages the house. She taught me about affirmations. But it made me think of one of the affirmations too is, you know, you put yourself out there and the universe is just infinite, and don't think that, don't be ashamed to make money. It's a good thing. There's enough for everybody. And the more you make, the more you can help other people, bring them in to what you're doing. And I am working on a couple projects, I must say. And I said, well, as soon as I get the final monies in for that, then I can invite this person to be an actor in it, or, you know, perhaps this person can be a makeup person or whatever. So I think you just have to, even when you're down the most, is nothing can make me be positive. Yes, that can, just smile. And that's a silly little thing, but that's one of the afternoon. Just you get up in the morning, oh, I think I'll smile. And it has a nice little influence on your whole body.
Yes, and your whole body and others. Steve, I'm going to give you the last shot at this.
No, I'm really pleased that you're able to join us. I think that we did want you on because I think Bill is a big fan of yours, and you are kindred spirits. Bill is always extremely positive. He doesn't like negativity. He always says, like, don't make sense of nonsense, and just to be very positive. And I imagine that's part of your ethos, but could you just tell us a couple of messages you've given your speeches about perseverance?
Well, as I said, when you were down a little bit, you just remember good thoughts. You put up your goal, and every day you take a little step forward to, I think we're all here for some reason. And I mean, I think my reason is maybe to inspire people, or just to use, I'm going to use up all my talents. Like, I'm sure, you know, Bill and you too, Stephen, are going to, you've gotten so many you know, one has talent. So you're going to utilize them all the way. Don't waste them. Would you like to know what I'm doing now?
That's for sure. And we have a couple of movies, right?
Yeah. I just finished a movie called Christmas at the Roanoke Ranch, which was really interesting. We shot it in Michigan, and the producer wanted to do it in Michigan because it snows there. And there had just been a blizzard, and It was 8 degrees. Oh, okay. I said, I went to this to Costco and got all these sweatshirts and leggings, and then we got there and it was like 8 degrees. And the day the last week, 35 degrees, 40 degrees, all the snow has almost melted. So he was a bit, he was not set, you know, he was upset about that. But we did all the inside scenes, and just yesterday he got a double for me, and they did the outside scenes because it did snow and it was 8 degrees, and I'm glad that it was 40 degrees when I was there. But it's a wonderful story about therapy horses, about a horse sanctuary, and how the horses can be used for people with PTSD and for at-risk kids. And so the movie really mirrors this actual ranch, which is called the Roanoke Ranch for kids. And so that was just another thing that things come together for a reason. You may not know what the reason is, but there it was. I mean, why did I have these things right here that I could show you know, at that particular time? Because they're just, we live for those moments, and just got to trust the universe to take care of you. So I have Christmas at Roanoke Ranch. Just that came out is Yellowbird and Old Man Jackson. Those are all on Amazon Prime. And I'm going to do a movie called Good Times at Blue Jay Saloon, where Dolly Parton comes in at the end. So that's going to be a really a nice movie. And as soon as we can get the rest of the money, we're doing a movie in Australia called Pollyanna's Wish, based on the original book of Pollyanna. So those are my movies. And people can go to my website, KathyGarver.com, and get any one of my 5 books. I have 2 new books coming out. This one's called Romancing with the Stars. I do that with Doug Hartland as my co-writer on that one. And we've done all these interviews. Guy, we should do you, Bill, of long-term relationships and marriages, and why they were, and what was where were they, what was the place that they found that was the most romantic in their lives. And then we give like little travel guides for them. So that book will be out in April, and TV Dinners TV. So anyway, that's my
Wow,
very
amazing.
secretive.
Amazing. Well, Kathy, we want to thank you so much for being on. You're a very special person. You've had a great journey and it's still going on. So thank you so much for being on. And Steve and I are both going to purchase, I don't know. I gotta think about it because I have 6 sisters and my wife. So I think if you'll sign them, I think we need everyone to have a copy of your book.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I'd appreciate that. And thank you so much for inviting me. You were both just charming, and I was so happy to talk with you.